It's Abu here. You're probably wondering, what's different around here? And the answer is everything. I took the last year off, not just from podcasting, but from everything. I needed a reset. Last year was one of the hardest years of my life. And as you know, life doesn't just throw one thing at a time at you. It hits you with everything all at once. I hit a mental roadblock, my business hit a wall, and then I faced an unimaginable loss of someone I deeply loved. I had a reset. I went deep, asking myself, what's wrong with me? What did I do to deserve this? I struggled with grief, with loss, with relationships, with business, and family. I was operating from a place of seeking permission. Permission to let go, permission to step back, permission to prioritize myself. And then it hit me. You don't need anyone's approval to take the next step. You don't need permission to be a CEO. But you do need the tools, the mindset, and the support to lead in a way that doesn't cost you your peace. It took me over a decade to truly figure this out. And now I'm ready to keep going, sharing what's worked, what hasn't, and everything I'm still learning along the way. So if you're ready, and I know I am, hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with someone who needs to hear it. Because this isn't just my journey, it's ours. Lastly, I just want to thank everyone that reached out to me over the last year just to check on me, make sure I was doing good. I truly appreciate the support, and I look forward to continue building more deep connections with you all. This is the Powered AF Podcast, a show about visionaries, high performers, and entrepreneurs, and their stories on how they push past fear, overcome imposter syndrome, and navigate through the mental roadblocks in order to achieve the highest level of success. And I'm your host, Abu Fofana. In this week's episode, we're going to be interviewing Lenora Addison. I love this episode. I love it because I didn't know a lot of these things that I got to learn about her. Now, Lenora and I have been friends for a few years, but there was just so much of her story I didn't know. A lot of the adversity she had to overcome. You know, why she, you know, decided when she was in school that she was going to become a doctor and how her career path changed. And I'm not even going to get into the rest of her story because it's so good. And she dropped so many good nuggets and wisdom to how to navigate change that I'm just going to allow you to listen to it for yourself. So without further ado, Lenora Addison. I'm super excited to have you on the episode. You know,
I'm thrilled. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here as well.
This episode is live, meaning that, you know, we're sitting literally right near each other.
Yes.
recording this. And so before we get started, can you let people know who's Lenora Addison?
Well, hello, everyone. I mean, that's a difficult question. I think, who am I? I'm always becoming. So that's who I am. But I guess professionally, as Abu said, I'm the founder and CEO of Kaza, which is a pre-launched hair care brand. And I can get into more details about what, you know, what we are and how we're different a little later. But I also professionally have a background in digital media and influencer marketing. So professionally, I've been, you know, the director of influencer marketing at ad agencies, where I've led campaigns for brands like Taco Bell, Samsung, Sonic, eBay Fashion. I recently actually just consulted on a campaign for FX Networks for the show Dave, helping them launch a social digital campaign. So professionally, my background and expertise is in social and in digital media. So yeah, that's sort of who I am professionally.
Professionally, okay, yes. Okay. And where are you based out of now?
So I am in Los Angeles, located in Venice Beach, and I've been in LA for 8 years.
Okay. So I'm guessing you came to LA maybe after college. What brought you to LA?
So I moved to LA in 2013 by accident, actually. I was recently a graduate from college, and at the time, 8 years ago, I was going through a breakup. And I moved here just to sort of get away from that situation and to visit a friend. While I was here, I was applying for like jobs, you know, just a recent college graduate, not really like in college. I was pre-med, thought I would go on to be a doctor.
Oh, wow.
Decided I didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't have the emotional capacity for it. So just sort of was, you know, looking for a path, a new path for myself, and decided to just visit a friend here in LA, in which I was applying for jobs, and I got hired like a week of me being in LA, and I literally never left. Wow. I had a backpack and two suitcases and I stayed in LA.
Wow. Wait, so first of all, pre-med?
Yes.
I had no idea that you wanted to pursue, because I'm guessing that you're trying to pursue being a doctor,
yeah,
correct?
Yes, yes.
So what led to that? Like, growing up, did you, like, is your family doctors? Like, what
right.
led you deciding, okay, I want to be a doctor?
Right. So growing up, so I was actually, like, I was raised by my great aunt and uncle. So I was, like, in a program, like, so foster care adjacent is what I like to say. I was in a kinship, which is what it's called. So being raised by relatives. And they were older, and they experienced a lot of health issues. They were sick a lot. My great aunt, who I called mother, you know, suffered from diabetes. And then my uncle had his own, like, health issues. And so I think growing up, just seeing having parents who were raising me who were sick, interested me in wanting to do something about it. I was like, how can I actually help people? Because my loved ones are experiencing a lot of, like, illness, and I just want to be able to, like, help them prevent that. Like, so much of this is preventative. So, like, how can I do that? And so I got really interested in medicine, I think, just because it was just a part of what I was experiencing growing up. It was a challenge that I had. And so I wanted to help, you know, help my community, help my family, help people. And so, yeah, in college I was pre-med.
Wow. Wow. And so you decided to go this route because you felt like, okay, I need to help people.
Yes.
Like, what, being so young, how do you even come to that conclusion? Like, how do you come to the conclusion of, I need to, you know, help to save people?
Yeah.
Did you see, what impacted that thought process?
Yeah, I think really mostly just, I mean, my mother, like, she would have, like, a lot of, like, diabetic, like, issues. So, okay. Like, I remember when I was young, she went into, like, a diabetic coma at one point, or, like, you know, she had a lot of insulin issues. So I was already naturally just, like, a caregiver from a young age. I mean, I was, like, caring for family members. Yeah. And so I think it was just innate, also a part in my personality. So I was like, if only I had all the skills, if only I could, like, actually do something meaningfully. I know I'm 10 or however old I am at the time trying to help you, but I'm not an expert in this. So I remember, like, I would form relationships with, like, the doctors, and, like, I would go to appointments with my mother. I would actually be, like, her advocate a lot. So I, you know, make sure that she was taking all the medicine that she needed and she was doing all the things that she wanted. So I think it was just put on me at a young age. And so I thought, like, how about I actually, like, be educated in this to, like, really be able to impact people, and specifically within my family.
To be so young and have that thought process, you know, like, now looking back and knowing you, I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, like, to be so young and have that thought process is incredible.
Yeah.
Were you and your mother close?
Yes, we were really, really close. We were definitely, like, really close. She was definitely, like, my best friend, and again, just, like, really connected in that way, and me really just seeing her, you know, be sick. And also, when I was younger, I experienced, like, I saw a lot of deaths around me too. So, like, you know, when I was 10, I lost my grandmother. She passed away from, like, cancer, and just, like, I just saw a lot of deaths, like, before, you know, my mother actually, who raised me, passed away when I was 16.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So it was just sort of like a lot of these medical issues and things that I was seeing. And I was like, I have to do something about this. I'm gonna go to medical school. Obviously, I didn't do that. I didn't end up going to medical school. But I do think a key mission or purpose of mine in this life is to figure out how can I leverage at least my story, or just me or things that I'm doing, to impact others. Like, it's still a value proposition of mine that I'm trying to achieve.
Yeah. And I think too, along the way, you realize there's many ways in which you could help.
Yes.
You know, like you said, you could highlight your story and amplify that.
Yes.
You know, you could help someone else along the way. And so
right.
I think that's really important. Now, as you were growing up and you were navigating this in the hospitals, forming relationships with doctors, You know, did you ever feel like, who was there for you? Did you ever feel alone along this journey?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I feel like that's just a natural, that's sort of a battle that I, another like life thing that I have to figure out how to navigate or just sort of figure out how to overcome, because I do think that it can be a really lonely journey. Like, I've always been so different, you know, I grew up in foster care adjacent, you know, like I was a part of a family that wasn't actually really, you know, they weren't my, I mean, they were my family because they took me in, but they weren't necessarily like my birth siblings. And so I'm already like, you already naturally feel othered in those kind of environments. And I think when I lost my mom at 16, just really having to stand on my own, and I remember that experience, I sort of I gave myself two options. It was like, you're either going to do really well in life, or you're going to let this like succumb you, and you're going to end up, you know, in a situation that you don't want. Like, I'm either going to end up on the streets, really. And like, as I know, and I'm not sure if you all know, but a lot of, you know, people who were in foster care or who experience that end up homeless. Like, it's like a pipeline to prison. It's a pipeline to prison, and it's also a pipeline to homelessness, because you don't actually have a lot of resources. And so from a really young age, I always had to figure out how to crowdsource my emotional well-being and also just like my life for survival. So I had to figure out like, okay, like, where am I trying to go? And then how can I sort of, one, get myself there, but also align with people who I, you know, believe can sort of, I can help them and they can also help me.
Yeah, that must have been hard.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, you were here trying to navigate a lot.
Yes.
And mentally, I'm sure that's challenging. It presents its own challenge.
Right.
And so you decide to, okay, here's another path I could take to help people.
Yes.
And I'm going to, you know, move to LA now.
Yeah.
Was there conversations with anyone, or was this just like...
Right. So when I, like my senior year of college, I took an entrepreneurship class, actually. And so I remember being like really inspired by my professor at the time, because I didn't even realize like entrepreneurship was like a thing really at all. I just was like, what? And then, you know, I was looking at magazines like Inc. magazine or, you know, Forbes magazine or things like that. And I started to realize, wow, like these people actually like are having a lot, like you can actually create a company that can have an impact on the world. And you can do that at a young age. You don't have to be, you know, you can do it at any point in your life, really. You just have to, you know, you can just need to see an idea or see something that you believe in, and it can actually impact others. And so when I moved to LA, I was just, you know, had that newfound passion where it was like, wow, I could like create a business of some sort. Like, what kind of problems do I have? So I just started like, you know, assessing my own life. I took, you know, jobs, like different jobs here and there. Like one of my first jobs, I was a technical recruiter. So I was recruiting software engineers for companies like Snapchat and Tinder. And this is like in 2013. This is before these companies even really like became the companies that they are. Like at that time, Uber was like new.
Mm.
Like people were just starting to take Ubers. And so I was like interfacing with like the CEOs of those companies sometimes. So like, I remember like the CEO of Snap, one of the CEOs of Snapchat, like co-founders of Snapchat, like we were actively like talking to, because we were trying to place help him hire engineering staff for his business. And I was like, wow, this is so inspiring. This person is like, you know, just like, what makes them different than me? Like how are they're doing it. I think maybe I should be able to do it too.
One, that's a very unique experience. You're going and you're helping these companies that are growing massively.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know them now, but back then no one knew who they were.
No.
So when you were there, like at the early beginnings, early ground, like what do you think you learned from them that really helped you where you are today?
I think really just sort of, the ability to take a risk, right? And like take a risk when other people might not agree with that risk, or other people might not see the vision for that risk. And sometimes we're placed with like gifts, or we're given ideas, or we're given things that people just might not ever actually understand, but you still have to do it anyway, because that's your unique, it's for you. It isn't for everyone else to understand. And so I just started to realize like, okay, yes, these people just, they took a risk, but also I'm not a fool. I know that they, you know, these people were at Stanford University. They have access to certain things that not everybody has access to. So for me too, just figuring out what access do I have? And how can I sort of use that to propel my business or, you know, anything that I'm trying to do forward?
Yeah, no, and I think that's really important. So you come out to LA, mm-hmm. I think you said you know one other person here?
Yes, I know one other person here at the time, which is like a college best friend. And she actually ended up leaving LA like 3 months into me being here, really. Yeah. So I felt very alone. You know, I felt like, wow, I'm in this new place. I don't really know anyone. I just, you know, I'm going through this like breakup situation and what am I to do? Like, I was really, really afraid. And I remember calling like home a lot, and I had friends who were just a lot of friends and family who would tell me like, I think you're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Like, they would tell me that, like, I actually think you're supposed to be there. I think it's actually better for you to be there. So I just had to keep the course.
No, that's really good. Like, so you said, you know, I felt alone.
Yeah.
But that feeling was familiar because, you know, you went through tougher challenges.
Yeah.
You know, so when you decided to, because most people would go home.
Yes.
They don't know anyone. They would go home. So what did you do? Did you decide to throw yourself at work, or did you decide to like foster that community where you wouldn't feel alone anymore?
Right. I think it was honestly like both. It was definitely like I had to throw myself. I was for sure like throw myself into something. And I do think it was work, because I was always like trying to figure out like if I am having feelings of sadness or if I am feeling alone or anything like that, how do I transmute that energy? Like, how do I, you know, and I felt like the best thing to do was like create something with it, like use that to like propel something. And so I would try to throw myself into that. But then also I started to cultivate a community. I started to, you know, start making friends with people who I was working with and just putting myself out there. And I just started to realize like, oh, wow, I have a community here and I'm not alone. And like, even though maybe I am, you know, sometimes we just tell her, I keep telling myself this same story, right? Like I'm alone. And sometimes it isn't true. Sometimes it's just a familiar feeling, and we can do things that are self-fulfilling that create that, more of that. But I had to sort of like change my mindset.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's really important, because even entrepreneurs and business owners, people navigating through life, they do have this feeling of, okay, am I supposed to be doing this?
You know, yes.
I feel really alone, and maybe that's a sign that I need to opt out.
Yes.
Right. As soon as we have this feeling, because we're used to, and I always tell people, in the age of social media, we know more about other people than we do about ourselves.
Right.
And then when we're in a place where it's just us and we feel alone, we think that's, you know, signs of it's not a familiar feeling.
Right.
So it's still fascinating to me how you were able to navigate through this again, you know, once again. It was almost like a familiar place for you to be.
Oh, absolutely. And I think just my life has given me tools to be able to do that, where others might fold. I think I just, from a really young age, had to survive. Mm. Like, one thing I know how to do is to survive. So I will survive.
Yeah.
Even if it is uncomfortable, even if it is challenging, even if I don't know all the answers, I know that I just, you know, what are my other options? Like, you have one or two. In my mind, that's the thought process. Like, I have one or two things. I'm either going to let this consume me and take over me, or I'm going to rise above it. Mm. And every day I'm trying to rise above it, even in the face of adversity.
So after your first job, you're getting this experience ground level, helping, you know, some of the big companies we come to know, Uber, Snapchat, et cetera. What happens after that? Where does do you say, you know what, now I'm going to go back to medical school because I don't really like any of this. So what happens after?
Right. So I actually, so after that, I didn't like the recruiting, you know, but again, it's like one of my first jobs out of college. You try things. I didn't like it. However, I did connect with a few engineers. Like, I became friends with like some of the engineers that I was working with, and I actually was like, oh, I have an idea. Maybe we should work on an app, you know, and maybe we should create something. And so from there, I decided to work on one of my like first ideas, which was a fashion app called Hooked Fashion. And it was basically like creating like a social shopping experience. So it was like a place for, I wanted it to be a place where people go to share and discover new places to shop, right? So, and using an app, a mobile app for that experience. And so I met an engineer there. And so we started building, you know, building this platform, bootstrapping it. I had no idea about anything. I had to learn. I literally had to learn how to do UI, like UI and UX. I had to be a UI UX designer, designing the interface. I had to figure out flows. I had to do figure out so much of it. But I think I also learned a lot from that experience. And honestly, that's sort of how that propelled me into the digital media world that I'm in, because when I was doing that app, I needed to find talent to work with. I spent a lot of time on YouTube looking for social media creators who I thought could create content on the platform or who could promote the platform on their like channels.
So how did the app work? Was it you could shop with peers at the same time?
I really was just a discovery tool mostly, right? You could log on to the app and you could figure out what are some unique places to shop outside of what the things that we already know, right? Because it's like everyone knows Zara or whatever the stores are, but what are some new, unique places that we might not know about, and we can help each other like discover these places.
Okay. And then how did that app go?
Yeah. So we got about 2,000 to 3,000 downloads, which was pretty decent. I mean, apps are hard. Like, it takes scale. You need massive amounts of people on the platform, really. And it can get really expensive. Like, there are a lot of databases that you are sort of, a lot of things that you're purchasing within this like whole application experience. But it was, there's another app called there's so many social shopping apps right now, there's a lot of them.
Right.
Honestly, I'm like, it was still a good idea.
It's like just, it to know it or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm like, it's okay. Still a good idea. It's just, I don't know if it was like the right time.
Okay.
It may not just have been the right time, right? I think it was pretty early and it just didn't work,
Right,
it just fizzled out, maybe it, I guess, sort of failed. And I don't personally view it as a failure, yeah, just because it leads me
down the path
to the next thing. It just was a learning opportunity.
Now, did you guys raise funding for that, or where did the money?
We just were bootstrapping it. I was my co-founder at the time was working full time and working on it, and I also at the time was working full time just at odd jobs, just working full time doing different things and bootstrapping the whole experience. Like, I would host like little events. I was just trying to do like everything, and I was young too at the time. I was 24, at the time doing that.
I think though that's like the, when people think people with ideas are coming from backgrounds with like money sometimes, but it's like, no, you were working a lot of jobs,
yes,
trying to pay the bills and trying to make sure that you had capital,
yes,
to then invest in this idea of yours, and you didn't know where it was going to lead you.
No.
You don't come from, this family that gave you millions of dollars to just test out your ideas. And so I think it's really important. So what would you say was your biggest takeaway from that first idea? Because it's the first time you decided to step out as an entrepreneur.
Yes.
So what was the biggest takeaway for you?
Not forcing things, meaning like I was exerting a lot of mental capacity, towards it. When things weren't working, I was really a bit stressed about also just sort of like the financial piece of it all and trying to figure out like, how can I scale this? What is my runway? These are words that I know now. Then I didn't know these words. You talk to me about a runway, I'm like, what?
Like, what are you talking about? Right.
But now, I do know. And so I think just like, it might not be the first idea. The first idea might not work. The second idea might not work. The point is just to be inspired
by
things and to think about what is the actual purpose of this, like outside of just yourself. Because to me, it's like, if I can just impact one person, that's winning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I think sometimes people overthink it.
Yeah.
And they think you need to be the expert or 30 years of experience or a lot of capital. But the thing is, like, you learn, right? It's not really not failing. You learn along the way and say, okay, if I had to do it over again, this is how I would do it.
Exactly. You learn how to pivot. You learn what the word pivot means. You learn, because I think, sometimes also too, people will just keep trying to push something that's just not working. And you'll spend years exhausting that thing. Or sometimes you can spend years trying to do something and then you can be Michelangelo and it works and it's just, right. You know, you're whatever. But you just have to realize, like, what's your threshold and when is it time for you to pivot? And for me at that point, it was enough. It was time for me to sort of like pivot and continue to evolve as like an entrepreneur and think about just sort of what it means for me to be a leader and how do I, you know, what kind of life am I trying to cultivate?
So from that first company, you have this entrepreneurial bug because yes. I know you would later go on to start so many different companies.
Yeah.
During this time, did you ever feel an imposter syndrome? Did you ever feel like, you know, who am I to be doing this?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, honestly, even still today, like all the time, like just sort of like, who am I? But then you follow that up with, who are you? Like, why not you? You know, so imposter syndrome, I don't think ever goes away. I just think you just learn how to navigate it and you start to believe in your worthiness, because ultimately when you're sort of feeling these feelings of imposter syndrome, you're sort of telling yourself that you don't deserve it or that you might be unworthy of this thing, but really just trying to challenge that thinking. It's really just a mindset.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of times people don't understand that it does start with the mindset. They're like, okay, but what did you do? And you're like, no, you had to first change how you think about yourself and your ideas and failing, and, you know, to really understand, like, it's, this is how you stay in the ring for 12 rounds.
Totally.
You have to be able to, like, you can't go in with the idea that, okay, I just need capital and that's the only thing I need to succeed. No, you also need these other things as well that you need to learn. Yeah. And a lot of times you learn by like not succeeding the first time around. And so from that company, what did you do next? Did you say, you know what, because were you still working?
Yes,
full
time? I was still like juggling like little odd jobs. And then I was like, okay, I think I want to move beyond the app. And I was like, I need a real job. I need a full-time job. So I went back into corporate America. So I started working at a company called Awesomeness TV, which I found on YouTube also, by the way, when I was like looking for talent, like influencers for my fashion app. And so they had an opening for a position where you would essentially like you would work with social media creators to one, like work on like just different brand deal activations and also help them produce content for social. So whether that be for like, at the time it was like their YouTube channels or their Instagram profiles. And we did, you know, a lot of partnerships with like, we would create like scripted shows too for like Amazon and Hulu. And so I found this company and I was like, oh, that's like seems really fitting, because I was kind of actually, so using a lot of my experience from me being an entrepreneur, my first company to get this job, essentially. It was like, oh, well, yeah, I'm already recruiting, you know, I'm already recruiting fashion and beauty influencers and talent for my mobile app. So I can transfer those skills to this company. And they appreciated that I was an entrepreneurial thinker. And so they wanted that within the company. So, yeah, I started working there. And Awesomeness TV is great. They got acquired by Viacom.
Right.
The founder of Awesomeness TV created movies like Coach Carter. And
I love that movie.
he was responsible for like this show called All That. So just things like that, you know?
Okay.
And so I got aligned with, I went to that company and I absolutely loved it. And so I spent like almost 3 years there, like 2.5 years there, working at that company, just again, building my repertoire, building my relationships, building sort of my expertise.
Mm.
I've definitely had a really unique journey. And I think, you know, sometimes people can be like embarrassed by that or don't share it. But I want to be very honest and open to it, because I think you can just use things to your advantage. You don't just, you know, it isn't bad to work a corp, you know, you can, to be an entrepreneur means many different things. That doesn't mean you don't work a full-time job and also pursue whatever ideas you are. You have to do what works for you.
Yeah. And I completely agree with that notion. A lot of people think of, you know, you could only be like, if you're an entrepreneur, you shouldn't be an employee. And I'm like, no. Like being an entrepreneur means you are always an employee to somebody, mm-hmm. whether it's your customers, whether it's to your team, whether
your investors,
you're always, you know, working for someone or for something. And so people would say, you know, the worst employees make the best entrepreneurs. I'm like, no. It doesn't work like that.
No.
You know, the way you do one thing is also the way you do a lot of other things as,
correct.
As well. So you're working at Awesomeness TV.
Yeah.
When does the next idea come where you're like, okay, now it's time for me to pursue this idea?
Actually, it doesn't come for a while because I was really in my corporate bag, like my corporate life at the time. I just was like, okay, like maybe this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe I'll just do this. I'm succeeding here. This is great. I love this industry. I love the work that I'm doing. I then actually went on to start working at advertising agency. So I, from there, went on to a company called RGA, and then Deutsch, where again, I was leading their influencer initiatives. And it was fun. Like, I was learning a lot. I was, you know, just meeting a lot of different people, a lot of, you know, influential people, a lot of executives in this space. So I was really just doing that until I got tired of that, right? Until now the bug is like, do I really actually want to be doing this? I'm not really too sure. I feel like there's so much more that I want to offer, or there's sort of, you know, a white space. I was sort of getting burned out at the time and having a lot of different conflicts with colleagues of mine. And so I think just from a mental health perspective, I felt like I was struggling a little bit, and I wanted to figure out, okay, well, I'm sure, and there are other friends of mine who are struggling too. And so how can we help each other? And so then that's sort of when the next idea
popped up. What was the next idea you thought of from those interactions?
So the next idea was another mobile app, because I don't know why I was in this mobile app. Now I hate them. I don't want to do an app again in my life. But at the time, I was just like, this is the best way to do it. It was called Open Letter, which was it was a platform for people to, clearly I'm really into like apps, I guess, which I'm not, but just crowdsourcing well-being. And so at the time, it was just sort of like, okay, I want to create this platform for people to help each other heal. So for them to share things that are working for them personally that help, whether it's like books that they're reading, you know, self-help books that they're reading, or maybe it's therapists that they're going to, or just sort of how are you, you know, taking care of your mental well-being. And so it was Open Letter. I literally, again, went back to the drawing board, redesigning like a whole interface for this.
But now you had that experience.
Yeah. So now I had that experience from the first app that I tried to do. And I also have, you know, just, I'm smarter, you know, I have more expertise. And at that time though, I wanted to fundraise. So I had never, before my first company, I was bootstrapping. And then for the Open Letter, I was like, okay, maybe I could try to like raise capital for this. And I had never tried to do that before. And so I was going through, you know, developing like decks, like presentation decks, which was, that was so difficult at the time because I didn't have enough experience. You know, I had never done it before, but again, I tried and I got accepted to actually like a Y Combinator, like little, like, it wasn't their like actual accelerator. It was like this other program that they were working on with founders. So, you know, Y Combinator is like a huge, you know, really popular company in the whole startup community world. And so I was working with them a little bit on just Open Letter and like trying to think through that. And but again, I had quit my job to do that.
Okay. You forgot
that part. I forgot that part. Yeah, so I had quit my job to do that, and so I was like, this is where I learned the word runway, because I'm like, okay, I have, you know, in my mind, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna raise. It's gonna take me 3 months to raise, or six, however much to raise money. I raised $0. Like, I raised no money for that, and I was running out of money. Mm. So I was like, oh, crap, and stress. It's like, how am I trying to build this mental health thing, and I'm stressed trying to raise money, you know, for this, trying to raise funds for the second app, because, you know, you see, I follow all the trades, you know, the entrepreneur, you know, thing. So I'm seeing other people raising money, and other people doing this.
And you don't really necessarily know how.
Yeah, so I don't know how.
You find this accelerator or this incubator that's helping you, and you think, so you're having these, okay, in 3 months, I'll raise X.
Yeah, because that's what I read, right? It's like, that's what I read online somewhere that like, traditionally it should take, you know, a person like 3 months, but I also have to realize that's a person who has access.
Right, right.
Keyword access, and maybe a person who isn't brown.
Right, right.
Like, you know? You,
yeah, yeah.
So, or who isn't female.
Correct, correct.
So, you know, I start to realize like, oh, wow, actually this might be longer, or it just might take more sort of time than I was expecting, but I'm also very limited on my runway, my money, essentially. I'm really limited on my money. So right.
How long of a runway did you have when you looked at, okay, I'm trying to raise 3 months, I'm leaving my job.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm leaving my job.
Was it like 6 months, 12 months?
No, it was like 6 months. But in my mind, I was like, that's great. That's a lot. Anything can happen in like 6 months.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Like, not, you know, what I thought. And so then I actually ended up getting a message on Facebook from someone who I used to work with at my last agency, who had moved over to another agency and was like, hey, we're looking for a head of influencer marketing for this agency. I think you would be amazing for it. You should come in and talk to the team. And so I was like, well, this is great. Mm-hmm. I'm running out of money, and let me just go consider my options. You know, I think I've always just been open to considering my options and realizing that it's not just one thing.
Right.
And so then I had a conversation with the company and we meshed well, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to take on this opportunity. And I did. And, you know, I think that the second idea, I was really sort of, you know, bummed by it because I really wanted to see it through. And it, you know, and it was sort of like my second pursuit at trying to be an entrepreneur. And it wasn't as successful as I wanted it to be. You know, on paper, it wasn't successful. And so I think I kind of just really struggled with that, where it was like, am I actually supposed to be doing this? Like, am I supposed to be maybe I'm not supposed to be an entrepreneur. Maybe I'm supposed to be an employee and just on the straight and narrow path. Maybe that's the position I'm supposed to be in. And maybe I'll try to do that. And I tried, but then I always realized I'm different.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just different. And so
what does that mean when you say that?
That means that, like, I'm different, meaning, like, I have a lot of ideas. I can't take that for granted. You know, I have to do something with that. I'm different. I think differently I see the world maybe in a more unique lens. I'm always, like, looking for, I see just inefficiencies and things that could be just different. I want to create space for people like me who are different, you know, who come from adversity or who come from these sort of backgrounds where they were told, you know, that they weren't going to be successful, you know, or they could have potentially been a statistic. I'm the complete opposite of any of that.
Mm.
So it's like, I'm given this for a reason. And so I need to do something with it that might be bigger than the environment that I'm in currently, which is like at the time, you know, might be like at an agency or at a company.
So you end up transitioning back to working in corporate.
So I end up transitioning back to working in corporate, and it's okay. And like, you know, I build a really great relationship with my boss who I am really good friends with today. And I'm running, you know, influencer marketing for Taco Bell at the time. And I'm just doing that. And then I'm like wearing my hair natural and it's curly. And I am using like hair gels, right? And I'm like, okay. I like love red lipstick. I love makeup and things. And so I was like, oh, you know, my lipstick makes me feel a certain way. Like it like physically makes me look different, but emotionally it makes me feel a certain way. Like it makes me feel like, oh, I can show up and be the person that I want to be. But when I was my hair products, I'm like, why are hair products so just like boring? Mm. Like, and half of the time they don't work and they don't leave me feeling emotionally, you know, sort of transformed. And I like had this like tagline that I was saying all the time, like makeup for your hair, like makeup for your hair. Like I really, I'm like, a styling gel is literally like a makeup product. It really is a tool that you can create all kinds of things with. You can, you know, from people doing baby hairs to people doing ponytails to people doing, you know, all kinds of things. And so I really just started having that conversation with my boss actually at the time, like, oh my gosh, like, this thing, I've been thinking about this thing, makeup for your hair. And it was honestly the first time I had a boss that really was like, wanted to cultivate sort of person with ideas.
Yeah.
And she didn't try to take that away from me in addition to me doing my job.
Mm.
And so I really just started like thinking about that. And honestly, when I was a kid, I braided hair. I know I didn't mention this like before, but it's like I grew up braiding hair. I was a hair braider. I started braiding hair when I was 10 years old. It was like one of my first jobs.
Okay.
And so I had all of these clients and, you know, so it's like my life has always like I've always had like multiple jobs. Like when I was a kid, I was like a hair braider. I babysat. I did all the, I was already kind of like an entrepreneur doing all these things.
Mm.
At the time, I didn't realize it. When I was a hair braider, I didn't realize it. And I also didn't see it as anything that was like lucrative or something that could be life-changing. And so I just never really pursued it like past high school. But when I started to just wear my hair more natural, wear it more curly, also started to realize my hair is fine. Like I have thin hair. That's okay, actually. But why are companies like making me feel bad like about that? Or just products aren't gonna necessarily change my inherent DNA. They can't change my hair texture. So I'm buying into this notion of this product telling me that it can change, it can help me change something, but really it can't. And so now I'm disappointed. And now I'm like, you know, disappointed in myself. And so I started to play in this concept of like, what if we just encourage more like playfulness in hair care? Like you just use the product and you can create with it as opposed to just like the functional benefits of it. Like, what about the emotional benefits of this product? Like, how can it make you feel better about it yourself? How can it help you to accept, you know, just practice more self-acceptance as opposed to trying to like change things about you? And so then that's where we are today. Yeah. That's, you know, how the pandemic hit when I was working at the ad agency and still, you know, I was working there and working on Kaza. And then the pandemic
hit. That's the name of the company, Kaza.
Yeah, Kaza, my current company. And then the pandemic hit and my agency had layoffs and I was, so they laid off like, you know, maybe 10% of the staff because of COVID. And I was one of the teams that was like laid off for the pandemic. And so then I just like went full-fledged into Kaza, like, because I had already been working on it when I was at the company. And so just been doing that for the past, you know, it's pre-launch. We're not on the market yet, but I've been in R&D with my manufacturer, really just like trying to get the gel, hair gel, because that's the first product, the styling gel, just trying to get that in a great place and really spending time thoughtfully building out the brand narrative and just like our positioning in the market and our messaging, really being intentional about that. Cultivating advisors for my company. This is the first time I've like had advisors. Right. You know, for a company. So
what is Kaza and who is it for?
Yes. So Kaza is a pre-launch beauty brand. We're creating a suite of hairstyling products. The first product is a hairstyling gel. Our whole mantra is, you know, we see styling products like makeup products. You know, they should be able to, it's something that should physically transform you, but also emotionally make you feel good about yourself. And a product that you can play with, something that you can play with and create with and really just take the pressure and like performance out of just like hair care and create a movement that's more playful and freeing and emotional. And so who the products are for, I want to, you know, our target market is like the Black diaspora. So, you know, you'd be non-binary. It's not really a genderized thing. It's really just people who are looking to have like a certain mindset, who are looking to have fun and play with, you know, play with their hair. From a demographics perspective, you know, obviously this is probably like, you know, Gen Z, millennial people who are just sort of like wanting to redefine like beauty standards and really just usher in like a new a new like way of thinking about beauty.
So as you enter into this space, I was just reading an article around Rihanna.
Yeah.
You know, I think worth $1.3 or $6 yes. billion. Dollars,
yes.
Hasn't released music, but that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. And so I'm noticing a lot of people like Rihanna or mm-hmm. the, I think it was Kylie Jenner.
Yeah.
We talked about Goop, the founder of
yes.
Goop. We talked about
Glossier. There's Emily Weiss from Glossier.
Emily Weiss, right. Yeah. And I think there was also another business. I'm blanking on her name. What's her name? She's an actress.
Oh, Taraji P. Henson or
not Taraji.
Tracy Ellis Ross Pattern?
Well, Tracy Ellis Ross Pattern. Yeah. And then there, what's Reese Witherspoon?
Oh, yeah,
She
has a production company.
Production company, okay. And so a lot of people are starting, and a lot of celebrities as well, starting to, you know, partner, or Pharrell. Pharrell recently as well is coming out with a skincare line.
Yes.
You know, the beauty space is, people would always say, is like super saturated.
Yes,
like, what's your feelings on that for maybe someone listening in and they're like, why should I start something around skin or hair? Like, there's already so much things in the market.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think it's really just sort of finding, like, I mean, it's like finding your unique proposition, and also just like there's beauty in the, like, in the niche, like figuring out like what your niche is, and realizing that, like, you know, a celebrity brand is a celebrity brand. That's really different than maybe your own, you know, like a personal brand, I guess. And yeah, just really thinking about like, how does your brand messaging, like really auditing the space and figuring out like, how does your brand messaging set you apart, and what's your unique advantage in the space? Like, for me personally, it's like, I know for Kaza, we're prioritizing emotional over functional. Like, for me, it's less about the product. It's more about the brand that I'm building. It's more about, again, like ushering in that new mindset. That's really different than how people are thinking about beauty today, right? Like, so many beauty brands, so many hair care brands right now, which is okay. They're, you know, they've identified the unique problem that they want to solve, which is around maybe like scalp health. You know, like maybe they're like, we want to solve dandruff. We want to do this. We want to do that. That really isn't the goal for Kaza. The goal is like to help people to accept who they are, and to help people to be more playful and creative, you know, celebrate hair as creativity and as expression, and just more about how, and, you know, I always say, you make a person feel good about their hair, you make them feel good about their life.
Mm.
And so, and what that means is like, when you can help people show up in the way in as their best self from an emotional perspective, you can really help them show up in the best way in their life. And so that is like what I'm trying to drill in with building Kaza. And I think that's just been years of my life experience, right? And even also just years of my corporate experience, now all married into this one thing.
Right. No, and I think that's really good, that despite seeing, you know, the saturated marketplace, you said, no, there's still a space for me, because there are still people that have this feeling of, you know, do I look my best, right? Am I my best self?
Exactly.
And this is what you're addressing and saying, you know what, this is why I'm creating it. This is the need for it in the market. And I think that's, you know, absolutely true. Like, I think whoever is listening in for that industry, that space, you're like, you know, should I start? Yeah, you should.
And I always say, like, you know, the problem that we're solving is like, personally, it's like hair care is overwhelming and it's too functional. Like, it's literally just too focused on like a function or a problem. And again, like I keep saying, we want to just be more playful and we want to create this movement. A brand that I love a lot because I follow just their messaging is Outdoor Voices. I'm not sure if any of you listening have heard of Outdoor Voices.
I've heard. They're the they create athleisure wear.
Yeah, they're the athleisure brand created by Ty Haney, who I'm obsessed with. But her whole mantra was sort of like, fitness should be recreational as opposed to just about being an athlete, about performance based, and, you know, like you just being an athlete and you needing to, you know, win a race. She's like, I just want to get the world moving. I just want to get people to like think about fitness as in terms of like play and recreation. And with Kaza, it's, you know, I'm doing a similar thing. So finding, you know, brands or people who I think you align with from a ethos perspective will really help you to hone in on what your personal niche could be and what you, how you can differentiate in the space.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really good advice. You know, there's a lot of, you know, I think my audience, a lot of, you know, women founders, yeah, women business owners, Black women business owners, and first time entrepreneurs that are really just trying to, you know, figure it all out. And I think that, you know, what Instagram does is makes it look like it's easy. Like, right, we just woke up and we figured this all out ourselves. But you just talked about, you know, you went through several companies, yes, that you had to start and you had to learn from,
yes,
right? You had to change your mindset. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to navigate over and over. And despite the challenges you had to face within your personal life, right, despite being let go, you, mm-hmm, know, during the pandemic,
yeah,
you still decided and said, you know what, I'm going to continue betting on myself.
Yes.
Like, where did that come from? Like, is this innate? Are people just born and some people are like, oh, I'm just going to always bet on myself? Like, where does that come from? How does someone,
yeah,
how does someone replicate that feeling of when tough times happen to bet on themselves?
Yeah, I think, you know, I read a quote and it was like, entrepreneurs have to be a little bit delusional, which is like kind of interesting to me. I think you just have to have a level of like optimism and a level of faith in yourself. You know, you just sort of have to believe, and it's not easy to believe in yourself. It really isn't. I think you need to analyze your life and see at what moments did you overcome? Did you win? You know, it may not be on a big scale. You know, I personally am like, I haven't, you know, again, on paper, what does success look like? What I can say is that I know that I've overcome things, so I can overcome this. You know, I overcame one of the hardest things in personally in my life of losing my, you know, adopted mother when I was 16. That was like one of the hardest things in my life. And so figuring out how to navigate that experience and really leaning into that in terms of my entrepreneurship, just being resilient. People think that resiliency is, you know, you're either born with it or you're not. And sometimes like that can be true. But I also think you can cultivate resiliency. Like, you just need to figure out, you know, aligning yourself with the right people who can push you, who believe in you, really just trying to drown out the negativity, which is not,
it's not easy,
you know, not easy. Sort of being willing to be othered or sort of stand, you know, alone. You're not going to do it. It's not going to be that way forever, but really just being willing to take a risk on yourself and knowing that whatever happens is, like, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, no, and I think that's really, really good advice. So as you know, about to launch Kaza.
Yeah.
So what sort of, what's the marketing behind it right now? Like, how are you going to roll this out?
So for marketing, like, I launched a crowdfunding campaign actually recently, about almost 2 months ago now, in which we were able to raise a little over $15,000 for it, which is awesome, because it exceeded the goal of the crowdfunding campaign, which is amazing. And so I think the marketing for it really is thinking about how do I saw a LinkedIn post today and it was like, today is the day of like leaders or people, business people building out loud, like building in public. I think they were talking about in relation to Kanye West and everything that he's doing with his album and you know, Donda, like his music. So for me, it's like, I think important just being transparent with my journey with the people who I'm hoping to speak to, right? Like, so thinking about that in terms of even building out the social for Kaza, like getting people, generating like interest and curiosity from people so that when I do launch a pre-sale or when I do launch, you know, something, people can, you know, I have this wait list of people who I can immediately like tap into. And I also think, you know, leveraging the tools that we have. I also saw this meme where it was like, how can you be a creative today and you aren't, you know, you're not utilizing, let's say like a TikTok or an Instagram or a Facebook, you know, Abu's king of ads, you know, how can you just sort of like find your audience and like leverage these tools in the best way? And I think for me, just sort of bringing people along the journey, like before Glossier launched, I know that that's what their founder did a lot, was just really inviting fans and people into, or their customers into the journey so that they feel like they're building with you. And yeah, so that's, you know, a huge part of pre-launch strategy for Kaza.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And, you know, because everyone sees me as a marketing person, they, you know, they're like, Abu, ask her about marketing. What are they doing? And so thank you for explaining that. And I know, look, we could sit here and talk all day because of, and that's what we did before we even actually recorded the episode, just to catch up.
Right.
And what I want to do, I definitely want to bring you back on the episode, another episode, because I want to check in as to, as you're launching Casa Behind the Scene and when the launch actually happens.
Right.
Because I know you're going through, you know, raising capital and et cetera. So there, I think this was such a good episode because not only did we get into your background, but we got into the mental aspect of like why you're building what you're doing, what you believe your purpose is and helping and where your strength comes from, right?
Right.
And I think that's really, really important. So where can people go to follow the behind the scenes of your journey as you build Casa?
Personally, like Instagram, for sure. You can find me on Instagram. It's just at Nora. So my nickname is Nora. My first name is Lenora. But my nickname, it's a family name that I, you know, can never give up. But my Instagram is Nora Rad. And then Casa's Instagram is at Hello Casa. And you can find me on LinkedIn, which is just my first name, which is my first and last name, which is Lenora Addison. And Abu can link this out somewhere.
Yep.
But you can find me there. And I definitely will be sharing more information and more detail along the journey. I think when you're an entrepreneur, you wear so many hats. And so sometimes it's just finding the right balance, right? To create the content so that people are part of the journey, but also, you know, you're doing so much behind the scene work. Like I'm doing so much just like thinking about, you know, again, intentionally thinking about what this brand means and really how can it really be meaningful for people and really impact people in a positive way and change the culture, you know, conversations that are happening within beauty. So yeah, you can find me there. I'll be sharing more. There's more to come.
Right.
And listen, every day you're always figuring it out. Every day is a new problem to solve.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm so appreciative of you. I'm so grateful of you for taking time out here to be on this podcast. Again, I'm figuring it out as well as I'm building it. And I think that, you know, for the person listening in, I think they're going to be really inspired by your journey and story and seeing that it's not linear.
No.
You've went all over the place, you know, but you learned so much about yourself along the way as well. So we're definitely going to have you back here. By then, I'll have a better setup in studio.
No, it's great. This is awesome. This is amazing.
And so thank you so much, Lenora, for being on this episode. And I will see you all until the next episode. All right.
See you guys later. Bye.
Thank you for joining us at the Powered AF podcast. Make sure to visit our website and make sure to follow our podcast anywhere you listen to the podcast to make sure you never miss a show. And please, 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 if you enjoyed this episode and this show, please make sure to leave us a review. It really, really does help. And last thing, if you're interested in this freebie that I just released, I want you to check this out. Recently, I put together a free online training on how to 10x your sales online. This is for business owners who are struggling with making consistent sales online. Whether you run a product or service-based business, this is the perfect training for you. The free training is still up and you can access it by going to poweryourlaunch.com/pod. Again, poweryourlaunch.com/pod. That's P-O-D. All right. Thanks again for listening in. I'll see you during our next show.